Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, on our second Z-Month episode, we have Ethan Yen to talk about Prequel and Megan Cross to talk about O Patron Mine. Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are talking with Ethan Yen about his game, Prequel. Ethan, welcome to the show. So good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, of course. Great to talk. So to start us off, you know, I'm going to just totally throw this out the window because I'm just going to talk about the order in which we've recorded these, whether or not we're actually releasing in that same order. But this is actually being recorded on the day of your launch. It's also the last recording of our interview series. So congratulations on launching.
Thank you.
You're already doing very well.
Good to have launched.
Are you avoiding refreshing at all?
This is distracting me from doing that. So hopefully I will have other interviews or something lined up to keep me from hitting that refresh button.
Well, we'll take an official pause 15 minutes in so you can do a quick refresh, get that quick hit of dopamine, and then we'll get back to the interview.
Perfect. I will need it, I'm sure.
But to start us off, can you give us the elevator pitch for your project, Prequel?
Yeah, sure, of course. So Prequel is a tactical storytelling game of heroic sacrifice. So you play as the first heroes of the realm who are taking on this large, overwhelming evil that's currently conquered, you know, your nation, your world. As you take on this fight, you'll recall pieces of the quest that got you there, as well as basically the story and the world of this fantasy fight that's taking place. It starts as your basic tactical combat fighting game, but then you quickly realize that, oh, we are sorely unprepared as the first heroes taking on the evil. Turns out, like, there's some kind of protection that makes it impossible for us to actually defeat this evil. So it switches from this, we can actually defeat the evil, to, oh, now we need to figure out a way to figure out the evil's weaknesses, preserve them in some way so that the next generation of heroes will have a fighting chance after us. We call it a tactical storytelling game because it's a blend of tactical combat on a grid with miniatures, as well as flashback scenes. So every move that you do in the fight is tied to some kind of prompt or world building power that you have access to. And then through that, you are recalling events, people, important artifacts of the quest and the world as you're doing that. So you can think of it as flashbacks to tell a story. So you're simultaneously doing both this tactics and the storytelling as part of this to create a world and a story that you can use as a one-shot or as the start of your next fantasy-based campaign.
Elliot and I were talking before the interview that this has a vibe of like anime boss battles. I was particularly thinking My Hero Academia, like, you know, before every punch, you all of a sudden have a flashback of why that punch is going to work or why it won't work.
Yes, 100%. Anime boss battles, there are phases to this fight too. So it's the first phase of this boss, and then you haven't seen my final form yet. Second phase, right?
Why do we never see the final form first? Why isn't the final form ever first?
Why didn't you just start with that?
I simply would just start with my final form, yeah.
Yeah, let's just start with that, and everything's on the table, and we don't have to waste any time here.
Why? Can you imagine how terrible it would be living in your regular form, knowing that you have a final form?
Yeah, just waiting for that release. Yeah, no, I totally get that. The anime boss battles, big inspiration. Another is just like the way when I play tabletop role-playing games, even combat-focused ones, that's constantly what I'm thinking in my head, is like when I make a move as my character, I'm thinking, well, what is my character's headspace right now? What are they thinking about when they're making that move? And so Prequel was very much based on just the way I run and play games and finding a way to codify that in its own form.
It's interesting because like tactical storytelling is almost an oxymoron, like, of a phrase. So I'm curious, and you talked a little bit about this, but like, how did you find the right balance of tactics and storytelling for this game? Or are you still finding it through playtesting and as you sort of iron out the game?
Yeah, 100%. So going into this game, I knew on the outset that the biggest design challenge would be meeting that that sweet spot between tactics and storytelling. It's why we call it tactical storytelling. It's a good pitch to get people to say, well, that makes no sense. How are you going to pull that off? And I won't claim that we've pulled it off 100% and it's perfect, but I think we've hit a sweet spot that definitely itches both sides of the brain for those who are interested in a game like that. Definitely one of those, that was one of the worries I had going into playtest was, is this really going to vibe with people, or is it just going to be too much of a dissonance in their head to be constantly switching back and forth? And I was pleasantly surprised during playtest that it did itch those people's both sides of their brain without feeling like it was rubbing against each other in a bad way, I'll say. I think it's not to keep tooting like Dungeons and Dragons horn or anything, but that's, I think, one of the appeals to a game like that is that you can switch your brain off from one side to the other, right? You do some kind of freeform aspect of role playing, and then the combat is basically a board game, right? There's very little like necessary role playing ingrained into that. And I think that appeal can help with some people when they're playing a game, that they don't get that fatigue of role playing for a full 4 hours. If that's not their jam, they can turn off that side of their brain and go into a more strategic tactical board game style. And then for those who that's not their jam, they can switch back to role playing. So I think here it's really just delivering that experience in a more condensed format that appears based on our playtesting that people are gelling with. So yeah, I think it's been fun trying to figure out that balance. And that was one of the biggest things that on the outside I had with James Quigley, my co-creator, when I brought him on, was like, I need some assistance in just like brainstorming and talking about how are we going to get that balance? Because it is certainly an oxymoron from the outset. Yeah.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about the mechanics of this game? Because as you say, tactical storytelling are two very different sides of one wibbly wobbly coin. What does a typical play session look like? And what are the mechanics that you use to play this game?
Yeah, definitely. So we draw heavily on the Lumen 2.0 system from Spencer Campbell for the tactical combat portion of things. So that is interesting because it was originally designed as a way for like fast-paced combat.
And just for anyone who might not be familiar with it, can you give us a quick brief on the Lumen system?
The Lumen system is designed by Spencer Campbell of Gila RPGs. He's done a lot of games like Rune or Slayers. He's done a lot of Lumen-based games like Nova. And those games are all kind of focused on like a fast-paced combat, like your looter shooters or your FPS kind of like Destiny-esque games where, you know, combat is very quick. There's a lot of tactics in there, but it's not like crunchy necessarily. Like it's like to the point tactics is how I would describe it. So that's very quick and easy to pick up and learn, that you can just like play and understand what's going on. And so we use that as our tactical framework. And you can think of the fight as both the tactical side of things, but also like the framing device of the game, right? You're in this fight, and then there are certain moves that you can do that will deal like damage or allow you to move certain spaces or teleport or things like that. Everything you'd expect in a tactics game. But every move or power that your hero has also comes with an associated like world building prompt. And that's where you start creating things that draws heavily on like Ben Robbins' microscope games, right? So we kind of use that as a framework of like you're creating elements of storytelling in that you're creating like locations, you're creating factions, individuals, and you're bringing all those pieces together to create events throughout your timeline. And so a good example of how we blended those two, for example, there's a calling or a class called the Swift Blade, which uses like momentum and speed to deal damage. And it has an ability called just change perspective. And change perspective both has implications tactically and narratively, in that in the tactics, it allows you to basically move to any point in the battlefield to deal extra damage as well. But then the world building prompt basically tells you to pick an event that's already been established and create a new event right before it that completely changes the context of how you were interpreting the event before. And so you can see how like that one move has the narrative and tactical implications. So it's like, that's the flashback piece, right? Like I'm doing this thing and it's triggering something in my memory of doing something similar, but narratively. And so really that's how the game is played. You're moving around, trying to actually deal damage, to this evil. And as you're doing that, you're building a world together. And then on the flip side, the evil has their own abilities that they can use tactically. And then narratively, they can take those elements of the world you built, you know, those events, those people, those locations, and they can like change them, right? They can destroy that event you or that location that you created. They can turn that ally you had into an enemy throughout the timeline. So that's kind of how the evil interacts with the heroes to build this world.
I love that they're like inextricably tied. The every mechanic has the storytelling. It is both tactical and storytelling at every single mechanic.
100%. That was the trick, was how do you build a prompt that is open enough that you can use it multiple times and interpret it differently multiple times.
That was going to be my question, yeah.
While still having enough focus that someone isn't like, well, I can make up anything willy-nilly. And so there's some additional mechanics we included in there to help guide people to make those prompts so that they're not spending, you know, 5 minutes trying to figure something out in the story building, but still flexible enough that, like, I'm going to use this move. So on the outset, I should start thinking about how that impacts our narrative quest there. And I'll state there's a big thing that I hadn't mentioned. It's a game of heroic sacrifice, right? So you're going to be on the outset, you know, as players, you know, you're not going to make it out alive. And so there are powers once, you know, the final form of the evil is released that we call legacy powers and revealing powers that allow you to expose the evil's weaknesses and then find a way to like seal them or preserve them. And so like you can think of that as like, you know, that sentient sword you have in your quest that like talks to you and has like snippy remarks. You can be that person before they were the sword and then seal yourself as the sword so that the next generation of heroes has the knowledge you have. Or that chosen one prophecy that brought you all together. Well, someone had to invent that. And maybe the whole point of that invention was this person who was fighting this evil and realized that only children born under the light of a red moon have the power to actually kill this thing. And so they need some way to tell people and they create this prophecy. Or, you know, there's this ancient artifact that needs to be protected. You're that hero who figures out what that artifact is and seals it away in a dungeon for the next heroes to claim. So that's a lot of the like setting up the legacies in a powerful way while you're doing the fight.
I feel like I was already in and sold, but I feel like that answer you just gave is what really like locked in the concept of this game in my head. It's like,
yeah,
just like to reiterate it for listeners, it's like you're not gonna win in this game. There's a reason it's called prequel. It's like you are this. Yeah, that is so good. I love that you're the people who write the prophecy, who plant the ultimate weapon. Like, very cool, very, very cool. I'm curious, you said you're working with James Quigley on this as like a co-designer. And I think, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the only co-design team we've spoken with.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, how did that relationship kind of form and play into this game taking shape?
So I came up with the idea of prequel probably back in 2022 already.
It's amazing how time just flies, right?
2022, 2023. Yeah, probably in that time period. And so I had started blogging about the design and development process of that on my personal blog. And the main premise of the game hasn't really changed since then. And James, who I'd never met before, had started commenting on like my social media posts about it and providing like some feedback and like some suggestions as well. And, you know, at the time, I didn't really think about it. I was like, you know, this is great. Like someone's actually engaging with work that I put out. Like, when does that ever happen? And so I didn't really think about it since then. And then I attended Big Bad Con 2023. And that's when I actually met James in person. He introduced himself. We got talking. And after that convention, I was working on prequel and realized like I had kind of got stuck design-wise as to how to overcome this challenge of between how much balance between the tactics and the storytelling am I trying to hit here? And so I kind of had a brain blast moment of like, well, why don't I reach out to James and see if he's interested in working with me? James has a background in actually video game design and development. So he's actually very mechanics-based and tactically-based in a lot of the way he designs things. He's also done tabletop games as well previous to this. And so he has that experience. And I just reached out and said, hey, you know, I'm kind of stuck here. I love to have someone to talk to and bounce ideas off of. Would you be willing to like go in on this with me and let's co-create this game? And thankfully, he said yes. And so for most of 2024, that was just the two of us working together, polishing it up, playtesting the game to get it ready for Zemo.
And why, this is a question we've been asking everyone, but why did you think that Zine Month was the best time to release this game?
One is just the momentum of just the community, right? You have everyone else who's really into making small indie games, also pitching their own small indie games. And so I think it like kind of every like rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. Just everyone else is excited about everyone else's games. Everyone wants to promote everyone else's games. And so, yeah, I just thought like if we're going to do this, especially for me as a first time crowdfunder, I wanted that support or backing and just feeling like I'm not the only one doing this right now. So, yeah, I think that's why we picked it. And it's been working out so far. We already have other people with their projects reaching out for some cross collaboration. So or just cross promotion, I should say. And so that's always exciting.
And then like getting into sort of the logistics. So people are listening. They want to go support this game. You've launched today. Where are you funding? When are you funding till? What's the goal and what can people get kind of during the campaign when they support you?
So we launched today as of this interview, so February 3rd. And we'll be running their crowdfunding campaign until February 16th. So this is a short crowdfunding campaign, just 2 weeks. And we did that consciously, trying to minimize that mid-campaign slump that you always hear about. And James gets most of this credit, but he was very instrumental in lining up a lot of press relations and exposure. So throughout the 2 weeks, will be an intense 2 weeks where almost every other day we'll be releasing media interviews or actual plays or things to keep the hype going. So
that's great.
That was kind of the thought there. We already have an interview that was released yesterday by Fiona and What Am I Rolling? There's this interview here, thankfully, from you wonderful folks. And we got some actual plays coming out Wednesday, and then I think we have at least one more next Sunday as well. So it's really just to keep the hype going. Crowdfunding campaign goal is $3,000. So I'm hoping we can achieve that with one of our major stretch goals will be the $5,500 mark. We've asked Spencer Campbell to write an evil of his very own. So
very nice.
He has agreed graciously, and I'm excited to see what he comes up with should we hit that goal.
Well, you're already just past $1,000. You're a third of the way to the goal. In case you wanted to refresh, I've refreshed for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I really love that you've taken this like very media forward approach to this game, to promoting this game, like having the shorter time span, having something coming out every other day. Because a lot of the things that we've been talking about with various designers on here, a lot of people ask like, how do we get word out? How do we get the game out there? And our advice has been a lot of like, have something coming out every 3 days. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be you just literally flipping through the game or showing off a new piece of art. But it is really smart and helpful to have those things to point to every couple of days of your campaign. For anyone who, because I know this is a question that comes up a lot with people that we've interviewed, is how do I get that kind of exposure? Can you talk a little about the process that you guys went through of lining up interviews, lining up actual plays, and also how far in advance you guys started doing this stuff before launching the Kickstarter?
So we probably started back in November. What are we now? February. So like 3 months in advance. And I'd say that was already kind of feeling a little tight. And there are resources out there, a lot of Discord communities and things of like lists of, you know, TTRPG media, like people who are willing to do interviews with indie creators, you know, like yourselves, or, you know, Rascal's always a great outlet, things like that. So we put together a list of folks we wanted to reach out to. And I know, like, listening to your all podcast, like, you got to send those emails out. You know, the worst thing they're going to do is say no.
You got to send those emails out.
It's a lot of sending out emails with a strong pitch. And we had a press kit put together beforehand. So, you know, it's all there. Like, you know, we're launching this game. Here's our ad copy. Here's the press kit. We're interested in, like, if you have any opportunities for interviews. Actual play is a little harder. It's knowing who to talk to, like, those existing actual play producers or, you know, podcasts. And it's a lot more coordination, obviously, on that part there. But, you know, we started that conversation, you know, fairly early on. And, you know, obviously not everyone's going to say yes. So then we try to figure out who does say yes. And then is that, you know, enough of content for us to span those 2 weeks that we need for crowdfunding. But, you know, a lot of it is like, when you first reach out, and, you know, don't be afraid to reach out, be prepared with the information there, right? Like, how do you limit the amount of work that the person, the interviewer, has to do to understand what you're trying to ask for and what the game is? And so that was big for us, was just being prepared and presenting something that was polished enough to tell everyone we're serious about this project.
That is the thing that even I look at when someone emails us kind of cold for an interview or about an actual play or something. When I see that someone else has done all the work for me, I'm like, I'll immediately take this more seriously because I know that they're serious. And I know that if I have any questions, they're likely going to have the answers, rather than if something is just a quick one-line email. I'm like, you're really making me work for something I don't even know if I want. Whereas if you tell me, here's why you want it, here's why it's good for you, here's what I can do, here's the time, great. Now, even if I don't want it, I have all the information. I don't have to go back and forth. And it's much more likely that I do want to talk to you because, hey, this game sounds fucking cool. let's fucking do it.
And I'll say, like, it's an art, right? You don't want to send someone a wall of text as the first thing they ever see either. Right? And that could just blow them out of the water and be like, I'm not reading that. So it's an art. And like everything, it's trial and error. I'd say, like, getting friends and peers to review things before they go out is always a plus. They can always catch that unintentional typo.
Yeah, Brian and I read each other's emails all the time.
Yeah, Elliot and I read each other's emails. Before I send most things, my wife looks at it. I'm like, hey, does this sound stupid? Just tell me if it's stupid.
Yeah. I have friends I do that with too, a fellow TTRPG creators. And more often than not, my advice is this needs to be shorter because no one's going to read this.
Yeah, tighten it up. Yeah. And also cut half the exclamation points you were planning on putting in there.
100%. Yeah.
There's one thing in there you said that I definitely want to highlight for people is, like, not everyone's going to say yes. And that's fine. You know, it's just like, you're going to get a few yeses, and those will be the yeses that, like, help you get the way there. But that's, you'll get those few yeses because you sent 20 emails and got, like, 10 no responses and 5 no's. And that's all part of it. It's just like, it's all part of the game.
It's also like, those no's don't always mean, like, your thing. They rarely mean your thing is bad. Usually what they mean is, our schedule's already booked. Ask further in advance. This isn't for us. This doesn't fit with our audience. Like, we get asked about various actual plays for some games. And it's like, this isn't really the type of thing that we do. Still looks cool. It's just not for us.
Right.
Or we're in the middle of a season. You need it to happen in 2 weeks. That just doesn't work with our timeline.
And I mean, bringing it back to prequel, I think that was one of my big takeaways, right? With the fear of, like, is this actually going to have an audience with this kind of mix of tactics and storytelling? And, you know, playtesting showed it did. And that's really all I need is, you know, that motivation of, like, no matter how small the audience is, it exists and I can create a game that they want to play.
Yeah, 30 sickos.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's like, my last thought on the emailing thing, just because I obviously have a lot of feelings about this, is, like, there's something that I took from Sean Patrick Kane, who is a TTRPG designer, Long Haul 1983, among others. And Sean gave a great Twitter thread that I hope still exists in a post-Twitter TTRPG world, but was like, my adventures in selling stuff. And Sean would just put the emails that they used to, like, reach out to people. And one of the things Sean did that I took for my first project was, I would say in the email, like, thank you for your time. This is my first time doing this. If there's anything about my approach that, like, you know, didn't work for you or, like, I could improve upon in the future. And I had multiple, like, retailers and stuff be like, oh, yeah, like, this is what we like to see. Like, but, or they'd be like, your approach was great or whatever. So I think, like, you can also be genuine about your position. You don't need to, like, if you're not super established, you don't have to pretend to be necessarily. You can be like, hey, I'm just a new dude.
I will definitely shout out my fellow creator, Lila Fujiwara, who created Jukebox, the karaoke TTRPG.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And she's now the project lead of the Cosmere RPG. So,
Hell yeah.
Yeah, working full time in the industry now. And she has this great series of blog posts on her Substack about how she created Jukebox as that first Kickstarter and like has templates for like press kits and like reaching out for interviews and actual plays and like how she put together that art brief to reach out to artists. It's like really step by step, like how to create a, you know, professional zine on your first go set. So if you're interested in trying to understand those resources, you should definitely check out her stuff too.
Oh, we will link that, definitely.
Ethan, as we kind of round out to a close here, we have a new segment that we've been doing for this zine month that we are confidently calling A for Advice. And you can tell it's confident because it's the last interview and we've done it 8 times and we've kept it the whole time. But what this is we've talked to a bunch of designers last year during zine month, between that zine month and this zine month, and now you're the last of 8 interviews we've talked to you during this zine month. And I'm curious if there is a problem or anything that you've run into during this scene month or in recent projects that you want to kind of like highlight. Maybe we can brainstorm together ways that you can get through it. Or alternately, if you have a piece of advice that you think first-time designers would really benefit from, we encourage you to share it. This is the forum to do so.
Yeah, I don't know if I have advice as a first-time crowdfunder, but I do work on like indie games. I've been working on indie games before this. You know, I've released games before this, and I'm currently working on 2 other games with various publishers. And we're all in the same phase of game development where it's, you know, establishing the visual identity of a game. And that, you know, is something I'm acknowledging is one of the more challenging paths for me, is because I am not a visual artist or a graphic designer. And I am incredibly envious of those indie TTRPG designers who can do it all, layout, design, writing. And so trying to figure out like who, identifying the artists that match your vibe, matches the game's vibes, and then trying to establish a visual identity with them, it has been a process. I won't say like, it's been a fun process for me, I think, is trying to seed over more creative direction and control over to the artist. Like sometimes, like especially in a freelance setting, you know, you give the artist an art brief and say like, we want it like what this other person did, and it's like very clear. Whereas like I feel like a lot in the indie space, at least for me, is like, these are the vibes I'm going with, you know, but I'm hiring you so that you have some creative input as to the visual direction and style of this game. And so doing that is in itself a process that you should probably bank more time for. That I didn't really bank much time for Prequel. And I feel like we would have benefited with a stronger visual identity with all of our art had we given more time to the visual direction of the game. And that is kind of hard to budget for in terms of scheduling. Like, how much time do you give for that visual direction before you're like, all right, this is definitely what we want. But it's something I want to carry forward to my next games, is be very like clear, like, I'm hiring you not just for like your output, but I want to know what you're like, what you're, based on your experience and your creative tastes, how would you mold this game for a visual direction? And so I don't know if there's any advice in that, but just like I'm living in that space on 3 different projects right now. And it's just a lot of reflection right now as to how can I get this process to be bringing out the best for everyone involved.
I mean, there's a reason art director is a whole job. And I mean, it's not often on small indie teams that you can afford to hire somebody just to do that. But that is like that's a whole job in and of itself.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. It's exciting. I like it. But I'm learning a lot while doing it. That's for sure.
I would also say, looking at your crowdfunding page, I think the visual identity is strong.
I mean, I appreciate that. The cover
on down. Yeah.
Yeah, the cover was all thanks to Carly AF. You know, we had themes of like, well, it's about legacy and heroic sacrifice. So let's draw upon like tapestries and sculptures, reliefs, carvings, things like that. And let's draw on, you know, stained glass art and things to evoke that imagery. So I think Carly knocked it out of the park. Every time James and I look at that cover, we see something new. So I'd say it's a sign of a strong piece of art.
That's what you want.
That is a high compliment. Yeah, every time you look, you see something new. That's great.
Ethan, I think we're going to move on to our last question. But before we do that, is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we cover about the game or about the crowdfunding campaign?
I guess last thing is that if you're interested, if anything I've said piques your interest about the game, we do have a free preview packet of the game that's linked to the crowdfunding page on Kickstarter. That links to my itch.io site. You can download the quick start, which has a few of the starting hero callings and origins and one evil. So you can grab yourself and three friends to actually play the game right now to see if it vibes with you.
And Ethan, the last question we always like to ask on this show is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is normally just our cute way of asking for recommendation inside tabletop, outside of tabletop. But since this is Zine Month, we'd love it if we can go not even just within tabletop, but within Zine Month and see, is there any other Zine Month designer or project that you would like to shout out and recommend to our audience?
The first Zine Month project that I backed was Out of Orbit by Andrew Bowman.
Yeah.
Andrew did Battle School, I think last year. And Andrew is one of those people I'm envious of that does game design and graphic design and illustration. And Out of Orbit is like a mix of Band of Blades and Lost and The Expanse. Just like it's a group of, you know, space explorers who are stranded kind of thing. And you're telling that story of those characters. So that was an immediate back for me. Another is, what is it? A Perfect Rock by Nick G of Deep Dark Games. Nick had released A Perfect Rock as a one-page RPG earlier, or I guess a couple months ago, not in 2025, and like to amazing reception, and has now expanded that to a full-blown game where you're another space-based game where you're exploring different planets, but you're using physical rocks and rock collections that you have in your house or you just find outside as like prompts to build out these planets. So I thought that was a really clever mechanic that he introduced there.
You've listed two products that are also on my to-buy list.
Oh, there you go. We have similar tastes, Ryan. So those two are the ones immediately on my radar, but I'm constantly looking through and I'm looking for what games pique my interest. And I definitely want to support those other indie creators out there doing the same thing I'm doing.
Thank you so much for coming to the table. Ethan, it was so good to chat with you. Do you want to let our listeners know one more time where they can find you and where they can find Prequel?
So again, I'm Ethan Yen. You can find me on Blue Sky at ethanyen.com. That's also the address to my personal website. And then Prequel is now funding on Kickstarter from today, February 3rd to February 16th. And you can Google that. It should be just Prequel RPG on Kickstarter.
Cyber Plus Punk Overload is the first official expansion for the award-winning, ultra-stylish, rules-light cyberpunk game, Cyber Plus Punk, that is specifically designed for action-packed one-shot sessions. In Cyber Plus Punk, you are a runner, a merc, a criminal, an activist living on the edge and running in the shadows of a gritty, ultra-violent world. Infiltrate a mega prison, escape a bloody reality show, solve a time loop, race vehicles in the Badlands, or escape the Netscape. One-shot scenarios, gear catalogs, plug-in rule sets, and complete settings made by an all-star cast of game designers and stylishly bundled into three sleek thematic packs. So go back Cyber Plus Punk Overload on Kickstarter to get the limited edition version with a slick hollow foil sleeve. Just search CBR plus PNK colon overload on Kickstarter. That's CBR plus PNK colon overload.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at diceexploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today we are talking to Megan Cross about her upcoming tarot-infused game, O Patron Mine. Megan, welcome to the show. So good to have you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We love doing this zine month project. We love just talking to a bunch of creators all at once. It's great to quadruple our output for 1 month. So very excited to talk about the game.
Slash octuple?
Octuple? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, well.
Megan, to start us off, can you give us the elevator pitch for the game? What is O Patron Mine?
Yeah, so O Patron Mine is a solo tarot-based and tarot-inspired game about the meeting between a mundane person and a supernatural entity and the pact that is formed between them as a result of that meeting.
Very cool.
And what drew you to tarot as like a starting inspiration mechanic for the game?
This initially started, I've wanted to write a warlock-inspired something for a while as someone who really loves the warlock class, but feels like they are done so dirty by most of the world. And I originally just wanted to, I'm like, what if I just like write some cool, like original, unique, like new patrons as just like options, and I'll just throw them out into the universe. And thinking of like jumping off points for like inspiration for those, it brought me to tarot, and I was thinking, all right, well, what if I do like some patrons that are inspired by like the major arcana, which then that, as most things I design, does quickly spiraled into something much larger than I intended. And months later, here we are.
22 unique patrons, I read on your pre-save.
So, yes.
Yet another victim of the scope creep.
Like, it's always, I'm just going to do this real quick thing. It's like, what if instead you were designing a game that involved you writing 66 unique prompts? Cool.
I know that demon.
Yeah. So the big inspiration was me wanting to make some cool new patrons. And what it became was something that the very, very reductive description of the game is that it's a warlock backstory generators, but that's not all it is. You deal a 3-card draw and it discusses who is this entity that you're encountering, where you are in the circumstances where you encounter them, and then what they ask from you in exchange for entering into this pact with them and them giving you your magic. So it's a way that, yes, you can build character backstories for like a longer term campaign or something like that. But you could also play it just as a standalone, quick little creative exercise about like this just chance meeting, or maybe not so chance meeting, and make some really cool, supernatural, weird little guys.
I feel like when I was growing up, my mother wasn't particularly religious. She was religious, but wasn't super strict, except one time I mentioned tarot cards as like, ooh, these are cool. And she got very serious and was like, you cannot ever, you will invite the devil into your house or something. And so for
same.
Which was very surprising. Like, it was out of character. And so I really took it to heart. I was like, oh, this is the real one. I'll lock that into myself and it'll become part of my personality.
I will internalize this for the remainder of my life.
And so for like 20 years, I never touched or did anything with tarot cards. And then reading Sam Lee's Anamnesis and playing through that game and then playing A Fool's Errand with the folks from Planet Arcana kind of like reintroduced me to tarot. And I started to fully understand like how cool and how helpful and rich like the storytelling behind tarot is. So every time I see a new tarot project, I'm like, ooh, what more can I learn? Because I still don't know the thing yet, because I had 20 years where it was verboten. And now I'm like, ooh, this is cool. Let's explore this a little bit more.
Going into it, I knew relatively little, because I also was raised under similar circumstances and have just recently started like exploring. And there's just so much depth, and like there's so much there. Like, at first I was like, all right, like it's just gonna be like, I'll just like kind of take some inspiration for it. And then as I went on, the biggest thing for me is like, I want to make sure that I'm doing, I guess, like doing right by the practice of tarot. And a friend of mine, Emma, who goes by Lady Dread, Dread Void Witch on other socials, has been doing tarot for over 10 years, practicing it. And I reached out to her and was like, hey, I'm writing this game that is so much more tarot inspired than I thought it was going to be when I first started it. Can you consult on this, like, as someone who has a lot of experience reading tarot, and just tell me when I'm off base? Like, can you just let me know if I'm on the right track with, like, my interpretations? Because I was reading a ton of stuff, but there's only so, like, a decade of experience can do so much than however much I can read in guidebooks and things like that. So all of these patrons are basically, the thought process was, what if this card and the meaning behind it and the themes and aesthetics and the tone was just a person standing in front of you? And what would they look like? And what, where would they hang out? Like, what would they want from people to share their power? Like, everything came through what the meanings of the cards were. And it yielded some pretty cool patrons. Like, I was like, there's some cool stuff in there.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, what are your, like, favorites that you would pull out from the bunch, if you don't mind?
Well, first I'll show, it's an audio medium, but I'll still show you. I got my test print.
Look how it looks. Very nice. I love a little baby zine. That's so good.
I wanted it to look like a tarot guidebook, basically. Oh, that's like great. I wanted it to be like something really little. So, like, really beautiful layout for all the cards.
Yeah, oh, wow. That looks great.
Yeah, Caden Ramstack did the layout. Looked Caden absolutely is so incredible. Good.
Yeah.
My wonderful friend Mac did the cover. It just looks so pretty. It just looks so pretty.
For the listeners, I can confirm it is very pretty.
It's very pretty, and it's very small. It is.
What is that size? Is that A5?
This is A6.
Yeah, we're printing an A6 game for Pocketopia with Viditya, and I'm so excited to make a game that's this little guy.
Like, I knew it was going to be small, and then when, like, the box arrived and I opened it up, I'm like, oh my, they're so small.
It's, you thought it was going to be small with an A, but actually it's small with an O.
Small with an
it's
O.
S-M-O. Yeah.
So I'm going to, like, do some picky choosies. So basically the way that the game is played is, like, you deal your three cards, and depending on what position the card is in determines what set of prompts from that card you answer. So the first card is who is the patron. The second card is where, like, where do you meet them? What are the circumstances behind your meeting? And then the third card is what they require of you in order to enter into this pact. So the replayability is really good because there's so many different options. I attempted to do the math to figure out how many different combinations there were. And a girl's got to have boundaries, and I draw my boundary is set firmly at having to do math. So hundreds is what I'm going with.
Because Brian's about to break out some scrap paper.
Yeah, 9,240.
So there you go. You could play this game 9,240 times.
I think I remember how factorial.
Is it factorials? Is that what it is?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because it's
22 times 21 times 20.
So lots of replayability. There are ones that, like, I had the most fun coming up with the what's, because I like pain, and I like to think of things that would hurt me as a player. So
I wasn't sure I heard you right at first.
No, I did in fact say I like pain. Like, when I was writing it and I was, like, talking to people about it, I'm like, well, I'm coming up with these, like, terms for the pact that could, like, really impact a player, like, if they were carrying this, if they were using this as a backstory thing for, like, a full campaign. But I didn't make anything that I as a player wouldn't agree to. And somebody's like, that's not fair. You hurt yourselves nonstop in games, which is not incorrect.
What's the kind of scope of option? Oh, sorry. No, you're doing your picky choosies. My bad.
Yeah. So my favorite what? Oh, I have two favorite what's. All right. So my first favorite what is for temperance. So what do they require in exchange for power? Their power demands moderation in all things. When shared, your life will be free from all extremes, each relationship, moment, and emotion. No longer will you be able to derive pure pleasure, feel complete joy, well with unbridled fury, or fall into the depths of sorrow. What makes you eager to accept? And you are given one day to live with excess before their powers take hold. What do you do with your time?
I like you're given one day to live in excess. That feels like a
great...
That
is really fun.
Also, because I could feel like that is a great like plot hook for something. Or like that's a great inciting incident for something.
My other favorite what is justice. They will give you power in exchange for your lies. While their power dwells within you, you can only tell the truth. Are there any exceptions to this rule? And what does it feel like when you try to lie?
Mm. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's really good.
Love a good axiom for a character to be forced to play.
Right? Because just because you can't lie doesn't mean you can't deceive.
These are meaty. These are like, what I love about a good prompt in a game is like, you're at least in the two you've shared, you're doing a great job of like the, this is true. And then here's the part you fill in. And it's like you're giving people fun like bounds to play within. That's really very cool.
Yeah. And that's definitely was my intention, is establishing like these are the terms. And then how do you like, what is the reaction to it? What is the interpretation of it? And I always try to ask follow-up questions that you might not see coming, just to kind of like turn something on its end. I love writing prompts. I love a prompt.
I have a question. So you said that like part of this was doing justice to tarot, but it's also doing justice to this this class of warlock, whether we're talking specifically D&D or just this kind of idea of a warlock style class. What do people get wrong about warlocks that you are trying to kind of change perspective with this game?
Now we're entering into warlock hot takes with Megan Cross. I play warlocks. I haven't played D&D in a while, but I pretty much exclusively play warlocks. I love them. I love them so much. And the main reason why I love them so much is because of this built-in character backstory, like this built-in relationship. Because I play games to explore relationships between people, between players, et cetera, et cetera. And the warlocks come with that already built in. And I think the biggest misstep is when people don't take advantage of that, or they lean into like, I'm just really sick of seeing like, I sold my soul to a devil and blah, blah, blah. Like it's boring. Like it's boring. And I think warlocks get like this rap of just being like evil edgelord types. And like, I've played like 6 or 7 warlocks at this point, and none of them are like that. And I think some of it is, people feel like when you're given the options, it's like, all right, you have the Fae, you have devils, you have Cthulhu, legally distinct Cthulhu. And the option is like darker. And I would always pick Fae because I would find that more interesting. And I also think that like taking advantage of that relationship, and I think giving the GM like something cool to play with, like, because in essence, they're the patron. And establishing some cool details, like establishing like that backstory and being able and like thinking about it as like, what does the patron get out of this? Like, why did they do what they do? Like, what are they getting from the relationship? Like, how do they feel about the warlock? Like, I think a lot of times, like, you hear like very antagonistic, toxic, abusive type warlock patron relationships, and I think it's so much more interesting to explore other options. Like, it doesn't all need to be dark and mean and toxic. Like, you can have a warlock patron relationship that is mutually beneficial. Like, you can have it where like the patron is like supportive and wants to see their warlock succeed, or like for whatever purposes they may have. But I think that I wanted to provide something to, I wrote it for me because I'm a self-indulgent game designer, but I also wrote it because I think it'll help, or I hope it'll help kind of get some of those like wheels churning and thinking beyond just like what's base level, what's like Like, what are the terms of your pact? Like, what are they like? Like, how do you feel about it? Like, do you talk to them? Like, more, more, more.
Right, right, right. And how do they feel about it? I love turning that. It's just like, think about, like, because you're right. So often it's this, like you're like a plaything of a higher being rather than like having a relationship. Like, it's yeah, it's interesting to consider to kind of flip that. And also in terms of writing games for you, I feel like, that's, I think everybody should do it that way, but maybe that's because I'm also a self-indulgent
game designer. I also think that everyone should just write games for themselves. If other people like it, that's just gravy, but...
Yeah.
Man, I've really come to, over the past like year and a half or 2 years, come to really love two things, and that is random tables and prompt-based games. Because I feel like for so long, they're great, and they lead to like so much better storytelling because... like when they're designed by someone like you who really takes the time with these prompts and really makes them meaty and like helps to guide and ask these open-ended questions, you just get to the place you want to go to so much quicker. Like I know for a long time I was like, oh no, I got to cope with everything in my, you know, D&D world whole cloth, which of course is bullshit because you're always influenced by stuff. And then the second I did a roll table, I was like, oh, you combine this weird thing with this weird thing, that's way more creative than I could ever be. Like, and the same thing with prompts, like having that hand leading you into something, then being like, so what do you think? Just gets you to where you want to be in like one question, which is every time I see it done well, I'm like, this is amazing.
And that's always my intention, is like when I'm writing a prompt, I want to give enough to lead somebody to where they want to go without only having one road for them to go down, but also without being so broad that there's too many places to go. And it is taken, God, I've written hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prompts at this point. And it is something that I really love doing and has definitely become like my thing as a designer, as someone who writes mainly GM-less games, like prompts are my bread and butter. And that's like the greatest compliment I can ever receive as a game designer, is when people are like, oh, like this is just enough. Or if it's like, I don't know how like this game, like fortune, like something was going on and then I got a prompt that fit in perfectly and I don't know how that happened.
That's the magic that's always super exciting. Like, just like two nights ago, I played a game of 10 Candles and we had our, you know, the traits and the moments. And it was amazing how often you go to pull one of those things and it's exactly the thing that's happening. It's like, I hadn't looked down at my moment for, you know, half of the game. And then all of a sudden, the second I need to burn it, it's exactly what is happening in the moment. And every time that happens with a prompt, it just feels like magic. It feels like, how did this person know that I was going to take this path? And of course, we're connecting dots in a really fun way.
That's good design. It's like when the player thinks that it's all connecting because of them. And in a way, it is. But it's like, it's also because the game is, this subtle hand of the game is guiding you there, which is
just
great.
Just ever so slightly like, no, just over here.
That's great. So Megan, is this your first scene month?
It is not. This is my third? What is time? My third.
What is time? My third scene month. what brings you back to zine month this year?
Oh, Patron Mine brought me back, honestly. Like, this game, it's a game that I started working on last year, and it's been done for a few months now, and I was just kind of waiting for the right opportunity to figure out what I wanted to do with it. And I just had this image in my head of, like, this tiny little zine, just this itty-bitty little zine, like, all laid out and pretty. And as a game development company of one, that's hard, toiling at the altar of capitalism. And all, and as I was agonizing over what to do with it, all of a sudden it was December, and I'm like, you know what this would be perfect for? Zine month. And the timing worked out as I was waiting for who knows what I was waiting for, but after I had told myself that I'm not doing any more Kickstarter campaigns because they're work, and I was like, all right, but what if I just do zine month again?
Just one more
little one.
Just one this more. Next one's the last job.
It's the last one. Yeah, you can clip this. So next year yeah, when I'm back here talking about whatever I'm doing for ZMonk 2026. You can clip this little bit where I say, this is the last one.
Yeah.
That is your... You, Megan, that's your patron, is just a terrible spirit that asks, but what if just one more?
But what if one more?
Why not just one more?
It's because the serotonin of getting to hold a piece of physical media that exists because I brought it into the world outweighs all of the exhaustion and stress that comes from running a crowdfunding campaign. Like, this little book... All the serotonin in my brain is coming out of this tiny little zine because it's a thing that I made and I love it.
Since we're talking about the crowdfunding campaign, tell us what's your funding goal? What can people get if they back? And what are you excited about your campaign?
Yeah, so my funding goal is $1,250, which is basically just the cost of what I paid my editor and layout artist and cover artist and the cost of printing and shipping. Easy peasy. And so what we have is I'm doing it real simple like this time around is we've got the digital edition is going to be available for $10. And then the zine is $20. And then available, I've got community copies available as an add-on, which I always like doing. And in past campaigns, people are so generous with donating those community copies. I love having community copies available on all of my games, so it's a big help to me. And then also available as a little add-on, Mac, my amazing cover artist, did a version of the cover art that I'm going to print as a sticker.
Very cool.
So it's going to be the chained hands with the magic circle as a sticker, and that's $3. And I'll throw in a Siren Song game sticker for free if you... back if you get the logo sticker. And because the work is mostly done, fulfillment turnaround is going to be real quick. I'm planning on getting it. The PDF will be up on itch.io within the first couple weeks, and then I'm hoping to get zines out within a month. So it'll be a real quick turnaround.
This has been a theme amongst people we've talked to so far, is that it's a lot of games that are more or less completed. We're going to get them turned around really quick. And also a lot of people keeping their scope creep down as far as stretch goals, which is great to see, because that's always the thing that ends up ruining people in the end.
And with a game like O Patron Mine, like, it's so self-contained that like I wouldn't know what to offer as a stretch goal. And really, it's just about being able to print the zine. It's about being able to print the zine and pay the folks who helped make it happen. And that's all that I'm going for. But yeah, like past campaigns, I definitely got caught up in thinking that things needed to be bigger. And then really the campaign that really inspired the tone down for me was Possible Worlds Details of Our Escape campaign. Cause that was very like, I know Spencer, like the Gila RPGs crowdfundings are also very like, here's your digital, here's your physical.
Get the thing.
Like, that's it.
No frills. And this is what you want. This is what you're getting.
Not only is that easier when it comes to like planning and designing a campaign, like it's just easier for backers. Just be like, this is what we got. We have two options. Which option would you like? And also, would you like a sticker? Because I love stickers and I just want an excuse to print some of these stickers. So
gotta have the stickers.
Like, I love stickers.
Megan, as we work towards a close here, we have a new segment that we're doing this year for Zine Month that we are confidently calling A for Advice. We say confidently because for listeners who are listening to this, we don't know what order these interviews are going to be coming out in. And you're going to be getting...
I love when we reference them in recording order and then release them in an entirely different order.
So for...
The machete order.
For anyone who's listening to this, you're going to get a roller coaster ride that may or may not make sense of how confident Elliot and I are about this name for this segment. But this is a segment called A for Advice. And last year we talked to a bunch of different designers. This year we talked to a bunch of different designers, both for Zine Month and elsewhere on Talk of the Table and just kind of in the world. And so we're curious, is there any problem that you're running into with this Zine Month or any problem that you've encountered that we could maybe give you some advice on?
My biggest thing always is math. Math is my Achilles heel. And maybe less so advice and more just like an add a, like, I've been struggling a lot with looking at something that took me hours and hours and months to make and saying this is worth $20. And that's hard. Looking at things and being like, no, like this is like, it is, it's worth this. Cause I put a lot of work into it. And it's hard when you get like people on itch that like just comment on yourself and be like, I can't believe you would charge $10 for this.
Oh yeah. Let me say a confident fuck you to those people if they're listening.
I'm just like, do you know how much work I put in? I'm like, I am paying myself 3 cents an hour.
Yeah. And so many hours that are going unpaid. Like, yeah.
Right. So I think it's like being confident in pricing, I think, is like my biggest struggle, like as an independent creator, as like somebody just like kind of doing this on the side, knowing what is fair for me, but also what people will pay. And I always struggle with that. Like I'll scream from the rooftops that everybody should raise their prices. And then when I look at my own stuff, I'm like, but not me. I'm built right. different.
Everyone right. else should raise their everybody prices.
I think it's like, I mean, Brian and I are classic for, I always run my pricing by Brian. We do the what would we spend on it kind of thing. Like the platonic ideal of like my favorite customer would spend the exact same amount of money I would on something. So I always come back to that perspective. And then if you want to get really mathematical about it, I know the like common advice is take 10x of your cost per unit. Like, so if you want to fall back on math, I know people are like, you need to be charging at least 10x the cost per unit. So that's always like a non-emotional way to justify a price for yourself is like, hey, just let's multiply that puppy by 10. But also, yeah, you're right. I mean, like, it's just like, think about how you feel about paying for other people's games and be like, well, yeah, this is how much I would pay for my game.
I will also say in our relationship, Elliot, I think every time you come to me with a pricing thing, it's about $5 to $10 lower than it should be. I do.
And you push me up. Yeah. I think that's also maybe an advice is like, have a Brian that you run your prices by directly. You know, like find that friend who is going to be like, well, maybe you should, you should bring that up a little bit. Because I'm guilty of the same thing where I'm just like, well, I think I should charge like, you know, $5 for this PDF. And it's like, no, don't do that.
Charge 10.
Charge 20. What if we charge 10?
And I mean, that being said, like what I've learned is that like people will buy it for $5. People will also buy it for $10.
That's actually the thing Brian says to me, I think, every time I am unwilling to go up is he's just like, the difference between the number of people who are going to say yes at $5 and the number of people who are going to say yes at $10 is not enough for you to make your price $5.
Right. Like you're not going to lose half the potential people. Like this will work. Like over the long term, it will work out. And also a lot of the people who are buying independent role-playing games, especially during Zine Month, they want to support the creators. They want to support cool things. They know that the like platonic paperback ideal price that we've come to expect of like $9.99 for, you know, a 500-page book or whatever doesn't happen here. And they're down for that. So like, okay, I know this is made with love. It's made with care. It's made by one or two people. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants to like take advantage of that kindness, but also like accept that kindness is there. Like $20 for a game, especially one that looks as good as this does, this little like this cute little A6 30-page guy, that's going to make your warlocks better.
Yeah.
Less than a dollar per patron.
And if you're a GM and you just want to make weird little guys.
Also, and if we want to lean back on math again, we had 22 patrons, so we're going to do 22 times 22 times 22. That's 10,648 options. I did it slightly wrong before. It's 10,648 options divided by 20 for $20. You were getting 532.4 options per dollar. Let's divide that again by 100, go by cent. You're getting 5.3 warlocks per cent, all right? Per cent 5.3 USD.
Warlocks per cent.
A nickel.
That's a pretty good ROI.
If you found a nickel on the street, you might leave it there. I feel like quarter is the lowest I'm really picking up. So like, come on. And you only need one good warlock to make it worth. That's 5 cents right there. Have I confused you with math enough to make you buy this? Absolutely. Go support this project. It's great.
Yeah. I hope that was helpful. The mix of math and emotion we just rambled through.
I do want to be very clear. I think the pricing that you've laid out, I think, is great, and I think you should. It's bad advice to say you should be confident, but you should be confident. I think you've done it right. I think people are going to be excited to buy this at that price point, and I think the product that you're offering is really cool, and it looks really good, and it's done, it's ready, and I can buy it and get it not too long from now. And I think anyone who, especially people who like Warlocks, are going to be really excited to pick this up.
Yeah.
Megan, the last question we always ask everyone who comes on this show is the same question every time. It is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation. And normally it's a recommendation of anything, but for Zine Month, I'd like to narrow your options down a little bit, guide you with a prompt of my own, and ask you, what is a Zine Month project or designer that you'd like to recommend to our audience?
Bonds Between is what it's called. So that grabbed my attention right away. Bonds Between by John Boyle, Bree Dedanen, Emily Enter, Lucas Zellers. I was drawn immediately to the very wonderful dragon artwork ever since I started dating my girlfriend, who is obsessed with dragons. I am uniquely tuned in to anything dragon. And it came across my timeline, and just it's cozy, it's cute. It is a card-based RPG, which I love as a card-based TTRPG lover.
I'm pretty sure we are currently, as of the, if you're listening to this audience, I believe we are likely running an ad for this very game on this podcast.
Well, there you go. Here's a double ad, one that's probably not nearly as eloquent as the one that's being run, but that is what I'm bringing to the table, because I want to make cozy dragon hordes.
I am also very much looking forward to cozy dragon hordes.
Wow, this is my first time looking at the page and the art, and I am captivated.
It is so cute.
Yeah.
It's a wreck your deck. Like, to do draconic magic, you are destroying your deck and like forever altering the things you can do.
Oh, God.
And it's described as like dragons that you would imagine, dragons that can fit in your backyard. So, and they have like cozy little hordes that they're trying to protect rather than big giant caves.
And I love Wreck Your Deck. I need to make more, like, I love like legacy games and stuff like that, where it's like, it's never the same twice. Like,
I've never done a Wreck Your Deck game, and I really should.
My favorite thing is when I like look at a game that somebody else has made, and my first thought is, man, I really wish I had thought of that.
Ugh.
That's when you know. Yep. That's the true compliment. That's the true measure of success.
Yeah, it's like, I'm mad at you for how good this is.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, how dare you have had this before the universe decided to put this idea into my head at an indeterminate amount of time in the future from now.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for joining us at the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also, please remind people where they can find your game.
I have been and will continue to be Megan Cross. You can find me most places a person wants to be found on the internet at Megan Lynn FTW, mostly on Blue Sky these days. You can find all of my games at meganlynnftw.itch.io, and you can check out O Patron Mine's Kickstarter by searching O Patron Mine on Kickstarter as part of ZineQuest/Zine Month. And that's me.
Thank you once again to Ethan and Megan for coming on Talk of the Table for our second Zine Month special episode. Next week, we've got another Zine Month special episode and another Zine Month special episode after that. So there are still four more exciting Zine Month projects for us to talk about here on Talk of the Table. Please, please go support these games. Help this be the best Zine Month it can be, and help make cool games, because that's what this is all about. And if you want more gamey content from us, please sign up for the Many-Sided newsletter, the Many-Sided Media Discord, or support us on the Many-Sided Media Patreon, where you can get ad-free episodes of Talk of the Table, as well as bonus episodes, bonus roundtables, as well as a whole bunch of other cool stuff that we've got planned for the coming year. Rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.